And on today's Windy City Careercast, Ms. Cleo's with me again today, and we are going to the International AIDS Conference with Jim Pickett in a very special show about what is going on with prevention and care for people living with HIV and AIDS. Plus, Cleo gives you her perspective on when she remembers the HIV virus hitting the news and hitting a global awareness, and so do I. And we also look a little bit at where we think the younger community is in their response to HIV and AIDS, plus news and all that you expect from us here on Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
We are talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
Hey, babies, this is Cleo.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Windy City Queercast show number 325. I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is Miss Cleo down in South Florida, Lake Worth to be specific.
Yes, you are, Miss Cleo. How are you?
I am doing delicious, Mommy. Fighting the heat, but it's lovely. I have a delicious tan.
Ah, I know you do. You have that tan that I envy. You know, today's show is really exciting to me because it's been a really long time since I've talked about HIV and AIDS care and prevention on the Queercast. And, you know, I've been doing radio for 10 years now, and there have been times when obviously we talked about it a lot more. And it has become a bit of a different conversation, and is still a part of our community conversation. And I do need to let everybody know that coming up here in the first few days of October, at least in Chicago, is the big AIDS walk run, and hope people will find out more about that. You can definitely go through our co-host Stephen Rader's website, seasonofconcern.org, and a bunch of people will be walking with Season of Concern with Stephen. But on today's show, Jim Pickett's going to be on from the AIDS Foundation of Chicago. He attended the conference down in Cape Town and had a good amount of time there. He was presenting on a panel and also gathering information, and he's going to be sharing it all with us. And Cleo, do you remember when you heard about the gay disease, when you heard about AIDS, when you actually knew someone who had been diagnosed?
Oh, God, yes. You give me a goosebump. You have no idea. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I was floored. I was so... Because there were so many things that were coming out. Certainly, we didn't have the information highway that we have now, and I don't know if that was better or not. But boy, there was so much misinformation,
mm-hmm.
And it was an automatic death sentence. It was so frightening. Oh mm-hmm. my God! I just remember, because see, I remember the free love movement. Mm-hmm. You understand? I remember that. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you something. It changed the line from "And the Band Played On," you know, where Richard Gere's character said, "The party's over,"
mm-hmm.
you know, and literally I remember bathhouses in the LA area, because I was living in LA at the time, and West Hollywood, they just shut down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, all kinds of things changed across the face of this planet as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've lost a lot of dear, as I'm sure many of your listeners. I mean, it's you're hard-pressed to not be touched by it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're hard-pressed not to be touched by it.
Well, and it's interesting because you remember the free love movement, and I was becoming sexual at the moment AIDS happened, you know, so it was all happening really so simultaneously for me, those people like me in their late 30s, you know, who kind of, you know, that was our time, you know, that those late 80s or, you know, late 80s, 85 on, and into the early 90s when I think it was really, you know, the AIDS quilt had started and there was more momentum as we just turned the corner into the 90s. So I don't really know a time without sexuality feeling dangerous, you know, beyond getting pregnant. It was like, you'll get pregnant
or
you'll die,
exactly.
I mean, STDs were like, kind of like, oh, that's just a rash. I mean, nobody thought about those in my generation, you know, whereas the free love generation, that was kind of the thing, you know,
it was go get a penicillin shot. That was the running joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's what free clinics, that and methadone, that's what they were used for.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to diminish anything, but if I'm being real, then that's what it was, you know?
Yep. And then you have the babies, which I don't mean to call those of you, probably many of you listening, because I know the podcasting world is much younger, but you grew up, you kind of knew it was a known fact. You know, you're kind of smart, or you think, you get it, you don't die. And,
you know,
there's a devil may care kind of cavalierness with a lot of youth today around HIV and AIDS. And so it, you know, the story continues with this disease and continues to write itself. Everyone's journey, I guess, is going to be different based on generation. And obviously, as we're going to hear from Jim, is different based on where you are living. And, you know, in the U.S., radically different than,
know,
the situation, much of which he's going to be talking about in Africa, that has gained so much attention from Bill Clinton and Nelson Mandela and Bono and so many other humanitarians who have been doing work. But it is interesting to take a moment to kind of pause and look at your generation, my generation, and many of the generation of listeners and our relationship to the disease.
I think it's so important. I've participated two times in AIDS Walk here in Fort Lauderdale, and I have dear friends who run it out in L.A. and San Francisco, and that are all part of those people behind the scene, the unsung heroes. And I have to tell you, and I just have to say to anybody listening, especially to those who are younger, and I take no respect from them, but here's the thing. Do not continue to believe that it is only a disease that is impacting the GL community or the GLBT community. Trust that is not where the numbers are.
Mm-hmm.
Even in this country, when I did the research a couple of years ago before I did the walk, I was floored at the problem in the women's community.
Mm-hmm.
And then more specifically, the problem in the Black women's community.
Exactly. The hardest hit in the United States.
Yes. And I was saying to people, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
This is insanity. How is this happening in 2007? That was back in 2007 when I looked at those numbers.
Right.
Because we're missing something somewhere. When we're missing something somewhere, because it should not be, it's not so much what exists already with the people who have been tested or were tested 10 years ago or have the disease itself. These are new cases.
Well, and I was working a lot with the Aware Talk Radio. HIV and AIDS was a big part of our programming, and it was a national news magazine radio show. And at that time in the early 2000s, African-American women were the highest population in the United States of new cases. I don't know if that's still true. I assume it is still.
In 2007, it was.
Yeah.
And that's what you're talking about. We're talking about from your time to 2007.
Mm-hmm.
That's 7 years. And so, again, we're missing something somewhere. It is important, absolutely, because things are so much different. If you start to factor in the numbers in the various parts of Africa, it will, in Uganda, You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. In so many places, it is just frightening.
Yeah, it is.
It is just frightening. And you are talking about children that have this disease. You're talking about the mother who has the disease. You're talking about actual generations all walking around with the disease or with HIV.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that there is some hopeful. There's some hopeful outlook on the horizon. And these conferences are where the best minds come together and talk about, new studies and new, ways in which to prevent and care for people living with HIV and AIDS. And it's really a great, great talk that Jim and I get to have. It really,
I'm looking forward to it.
Shines a light on where we are right here and right now. So, mm-hmm. We're going to break. We're going to do some news and we'll be back with Jim Pickett, taking us to the International AIDS Conference on this Queercast.
Hi, I'm a Miller Lite Brewmaster.
Yeah, and I'm a Miller Lite Drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
I just created a revolutionary aluminum pint bottle. Great new way to enjoy the taste of Miller Lite.
Wow. See, I just designed a new game day delicacy to be enjoyed with your great tasting beer, the 8-layer dip.
Well, the aluminum pint has a wider mouth, giving every sip a superior flow that delivers the great taste.
That's terrific. Most people flow from beef to bean to sour cream to cheese to guacamole to salsa to veggies. See, I'm not most people, though. I flow all the way to jambalaya.
Huh. Also, it's got a resealable cap that makes sure every sip tastes as fresh as the first.
Well, my dip is so hearty, it can last from a day game to a night game.
This isn't a competition, you know.
Okay, fine. You advance the science of drinking great-tasting beer, and I advance the art of enjoying it.
Introducing the new aluminum pint bottle from Miller Lite. Just another way for you to enjoy the great taste. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is The Week in News. Members of Services and Advocacy for GLBT Elders, or SAGE, attended a meeting about healthcare reform and older Americans held by White House Senior Advisor Valerie Jarrett. Several pro-elder groups were called together to get information about the pieces of the Community Living Assistance Services and Supports Act that are not being talked about and need to get more coverage.
New York's Division on Civil Rights is allowing Paul Nathan, a gay black man, to file a complaint against the Bank of New York after he claimed that he not only was the recipient of racial and anti-gay slurs, but he was let go after he reported the treatment. Six of Nathan's former coworkers confirmed his allegations, which include a claim that someone posted a photo with a threat that Nathan would be sodomized with a stick. The bank has denied all charges.
In Ohio, convicted rapist Robert Williams was described as calculating, even befriending his first two victims by pretending to be their gay best friend. The Hamilton County prosecutor said Williams, like a spider, weaved intricate lies about who he was and what he was. Once the women became ensnared, he pounced. Williams has been convicted on 4 charges of rape and could receive 40 years in prison when sentenced on September 15th.
In Queens, New York, gay and lesbian residents of the Kew Gardens apartment complex have filed discrimination-based lawsuits claiming co-op board members called them anti-gay slurs and refused to make repairs. One plaintiff did settle in June after a flyer about repairs was taped to his door with the word fags written on it.
In California, the West Hollywood City Council will unveil a bronze plaque honoring same-sex marriages at its September 8th meeting. The marker, engraved with a quote from activist Nelson Mandela, will be permanently installed at West Hollywood Park off North San Vicente Boulevard, where some of the state's first same-sex marriages were performed.
An ESPN survey of U.S. college football players has revealed that 49.4% said that they have had a gay athlete on their team. The figure actually rose to 70% among colleges in the Pac-10 conference, which includes UCLA, Stanford, and Oregon.
In world news, a 4-day leadership camp for gay and lesbian youth has taken place in the Canadian province of Saskatchewan. It is the first such retreat of its kind in a province with 40 registered participants across Canada. The exact location was kept confidential for safety and security reasons.
Paul von Dadelzen, the acting head judge of the family court in New Zealand, said that same-sex couples must be allowed to adopt children. He added that research has shown that children of same-sex partners are not disadvantaged in any way. Under the country's Adoption Act, only individuals and married couples can adopt a child, meaning that only one partner in a gay couple can have legal standing to adopt.
In London, Helen Goddard, a music teacher at a prestigious girls' school, pled guilty to having a 5-month affair with a 15-year-old student. Goddard now faces up to 14 years in prison. The unnamed student is still reportedly in love with Goddard and wants to continue their relationship.
A cricket team composed of Hijras, the term for South Asia's trans individuals, most of whom identify as female, defeated the Olympians men's club in a game in Sukkur, Pakistan. I want to dedicate our victory to Justice Chowdhury, who ordered the government to stop discriminating against Hijras, said Sanam Khan, the captain of the winning team.
In entertainment news, singer George Michael is speaking out after an accident in London in which his Range Rover crashed into the back of a truck. Michael said, "Neither of us was charged because we were both stone cold sober. We both think the other is to blame, so this is just an insurance fight." Michael recently started driving again after a 2-year ban.
American Idol is going Joe Bro. Joe Jonas, one of the famed Jonas Brothers, will serve as a guest judge on the show. He joins other celebrity judges such as Victoria Beckham, Shania Twain, and Mary J. Blige.
Actress Amanda Seyfried of TV's Big Love in the movie Mamma Mia revealed that she and co-star Megan Fox had to film a lesbian makeout scene for the upcoming movie Jennifer's Body. "We have at least one makeout scene. We knew that it was going to play a really big role in publicizing the movie. We kind of rolled our eyes at the idea of having to make out."
Pop superstar Whitney Houston will be Oprah Winfrey's first guest when the talk show queen starts her 24th season on September 14th. Houston, who is releasing her CD, I Look to You, Monday, August 31st, will be doing her first major interview since her infamous conversation with Diane Sawyer in 2002.
Kylie Minogue is slated to start her first U.S. tour at the end of September. She credits gay fans for defending her from criticism when she started her career. "I was only 19, she said, "and I think the gay audience kind of picked up on that and decided to defend me and adopt me. They saw I was being criticized for being myself." And that's the Week in News, brought to you by Windy City Times.
America's favorite family musical, Cats, is coming to your hometown.
If you're offering me a pheasant, I'd rather have grouse.
It's the original magical musical.
Oh, well, I never was there ever. And cats are clever as magical Mr. Mustafa Lee.
It's a memory to last 9 lifetimes. There's no better way to introduce your family to the wonders of live theater than with the magic, the mystery, the memory of Cats. See it live on stage, then take the memory home forever with the Universal Studios home video.
America's favorite family musical, Cats, is coming back to the Cadillac Palace Theater October 13th through the 18th. For tickets, call 800-775-2000 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Cats, take your family now. They'll remember it forever.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative. Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of September 1st, 2009, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Hailed by the New York Times as one of the greatest dancers in history, ballet legend Mikhail Baryshnikov will perform the Chicago premiere of Three Solos and a Duet with dance partner and collaborator Ana Laguna, September 25th through the 27th at the Harris Theater Chicago. For tickets and more, visit harristheaterchicago.org. Don't miss Baryshnikov in the dance event of the fall season.
Poseidon, an upside-down musical, will float your boat, says the Chicago Tribune. See the Jeff-recommended hit musical parody of the cult classic disaster film, now held over at the Chopin Theater. For tickets and information, go to handbagproductions.org.
Million Dollar Quartet is a hit, raves the Chicago Tribune. On December 4th, 1956, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Relive that night with the new rock and roll musical, now extended at the Apollo Theater. Don't miss this show. For tickets to Million Dollar Quartet, visit Ticketmaster.com.
American Theater Company presents Yeast Nation, The Triumph of Life, a new musical from the Tony Award-winning creators of Urinetown. In the year 3,458,000 BC, a colony of salt-eating yeasts, through the faith of a single-celled dreamer, start an evolutionary chain reaction that changes existence forever. Starring Barbara Robertson, Gary Houston, and more. Yeast Nation, The Triumph of Life, begins September 10th. Tickets at atcweb.org.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hey, this is Cindy Lauper. Big shout out to Windy City Clearcast.
You strung out across the desert, have hands in the shape of a heart, somewhere lost in translation, spoken in the dark. And if I knew which way was summer, I'd know where to end it all, my friend. We touched down in a hazy city, flags of fortune flying high. Pretty girls, they were dancing. Must have been the month of July. And if I had my time in Eden, would I make the same mistakes again?
In July, the 5th International AIDS Conference was hosted in Cape Town, South Africa, and AIDS Foundation of Chicago's very own director of advocacy, Jim Pickett, attended. Jim is the chair of IRMA, the International Rectal Microbicide Advocates, a global network of over 800 advocates, scientists, policymakers, and funders from over 60 countries dedicated to the research and development of safe, effective, acceptable, and accessible rectal microbicides, as well as other new HIV prevention technologies. And it's so great to have you on the show, Jim. How are you?
I'm great. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks, Amy.
You have such a mouthful of title.
Oh, I know.
And no pun intended, dear.
Oh, yeah, indeed.
So tell me, was this your first trip to South Africa?
Actually, I was in South Africa in 2006 for a microbicide-specific conference that was also held in Cape Town. So this year was my triumphant return.
Mm. And what was your role this year? Because I know you had a special role this year as a part of the conference.
Right. As chair of IRMA, we were co-sponsoring a satellite session called Rectal Microbicide Development,
uh-huh,
and African Perspective. So we worked with the AIDS Vaccine Advocacy Coalition, the Microbicide Trials Network, a South African group called Health for Men, and a few others to pull together a session focused on rectal microbicides, the research, and with specific interest around gay men and men who have sex with men on the African continent and their prevention needs.
So just to get some of our terms, what is a rectal microbicide?
So a microbicide is something, it doesn't exist yet, and they're under study, both vaginal and rectal, and it could be a gel, a cream, a foam, or something else that could prevent the sexual transmission of HIV when applied inside the vagina or inside the rectum. So it would be a new prevention tool that could enhance the efficacy of a condom or could provide protection if condoms weren't in the picture.
Wow. So this is really kind of cutting edge research that you're involved with.
Yes, I think so. Yeah. And from an advocacy point of view, it is definitely on the cutting edge.
And so how is it received? Because, you know, a lot of people like what's tried and true. They don't want new. They're suspect. How do you find, I guess, on an international level, what is kind of the feedback on the work that you're doing? And then what is it in terms of on the African continent?
Well, while there's a number of layers to that question, I'll say overall, you know, most people want and understand that we need more tools to protect ourselves from HIV, and that condoms alone aren't enough, that condoms require the active participation of the insertive partner, whether you're a male or a female,
mm-hmm,
and it requires their consent. so we don't really have tools for receptive partners, whether they're women or men. So I think people really get the idea that we need more things, and microbicides would be great. People do become concerned when it'll be likely that a microbicide will have less effectiveness or be less effective at preventing HIV compared to a condom.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll still want to be promoting condoms, but you know, when you're looking at zero efficacy versus 60% efficacy, you know, mm-hmm. the ideal would be higher, 60%.
Right.
In the case of a microbicide. Now, when we're talking about rectal microbicides, that opens up a whole nother game,
mm-hmm.
because there is still a great deal of stigma and denial about anal intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
There's this sense that it is only among gay men and MSM,
mm-hmm.
men who have sex with men, when in fact, around the world, it is practiced by more heterosexuals than homosexuals.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the sort of, there's the sociocultural, the political, the homophobic structures that make it very hard to talk about anal sex,
mm-hmm.
and to talk about it in a way that is helpful.
Well, and I found it interesting that, you know, your session was called Rectal Microbicide Development, an African Perspective. So I think that was my latter part of the question. What are the challenges that face that country, that culture, that continent, South Africa, obviously being where you all were having the conference,
well,
but the continent the culture in general?
Right. Well, I mean, across Africa has the biggest percentage of HIV cases in the world. South Africa particularly has very high rates of HIV among the general population. But there's this sort of notion that gets put out that Africa is a quote-unquote heterosexual epidemic.
Mm.
And in fact, that's not the case. There's high rates of HIV among gay men. In a number of countries, they're anywhere from 12% to 30% of gay men are infected. In Zambia, one study showed that 1 in 3 gay men or MSM were infected with HIV.
Hmm.
Over 15% in South Africa. Yet there's this ongoing notion that it's heterosexual and that actually that gay men and MSM don't even exist on the continent.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really problematic. And this, again, goes into my points around kind of structural homophobia. For instance, UNAIDS is the big United Nations AIDS organization devoted to this topic, and they reported last year that out of 128 countries that submitted data to them, 44% of those countries provided zero data on gay men or MSM.
Wow.
So 56 countries didn't even acknowledge that they existed. So no wonder they say that their epidemic is all heterosexual.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that there's gay men and MSM around the world have been severely under-resourced. In 2006, less than 1% of $670 million spent on global prevention targeted gay men and MSM.
Wow.
And a lot of this has happened in the African context, where there is a number of countries that criminalize HIV. There is actually some countries that criminalize being gay. Some countries have the death penalty for being gay.
Right.
And there's certainly lots of cultural issues that make being gay very hard, and people have to be very much underground. And so they're not getting resourced, and then they don't have access to resources.
Well, it's interesting you say that about the just lack of reporting, you know, this black hole of reporting, mm-hmm. because, you know, what we're starting to hear in a lot of our international news stories that we do on all of our podcasts and Windy City Times publishes in the paper are more and more stories coming out of Muslim nations. But it is true that we know this kind of criminal behavior and crimes against gay or MSM or lesbian, I guess.
Right.
Homosexuals in Africa has to be equal to what we are just starting to hear being reported in a lot of Muslim countries, Middle Eastern countries. What are the challenges then of how you access these gay men or men seeking men in Africa?
Well, there are some serious, serious challenges. I mean, a lot of gay men have reported that they've been, you know, blackmailed because of their sexuality. They're afraid to be out in their community. They're afraid to seek any kind of health services. They've been denied health care based on their sexuality. A number of them have reported rape. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of issues that make it very hard to reach them and make it unlikely for them to want to seek care. And then there's just really basic things. One of the presenters from our session, our satellite session, talked about lubricant, the availability of lubricant for MSM and gay men in Africa. And, you know, water-based lubricant is an essential part of HIV prevention. You know, you use condoms, you use water-based lubricant. Well, about a quarter in a number of different samples of men who had regular anal sex did not have access, or only about a quarter were using water-based lubricant. Hmm. About half of gay men or MSM were using petroleum products, and petroleum products break down the condom. So they don't even have access to lubes. 75% of men who are having sex with another man do not have access to proper lube. They're using Vaseline or saliva, or they're not using lubricant at all, if you can imagine.
Yeah.
Which puts people at much higher risk for HIV acquisition. The rectum is very fragile. And water-based lube is an essential part of keeping that area protected. So that to me is just a sample of how daunting it is, that even in places where we can get men condoms and they can access condoms, they don't have access to lubricant.
That sounds like an amazing philanthropic opportunity for the, you know, porn industry to like give, pay it forward or something to some,
right on.
To some other, countries, you know, do a little something to, you know, do a little philanthropy.
I know a number of African advocates who, when they travel abroad and go to Europe or wherever, one of the things that they bring back with them, they stuff their suitcase full of like those little lube packets that we hand out a lot here in the U.S. and in Chicago with condom packs. They stock up on that. I mean, that stuff is really a hot commodity.
Yeah.
People want to protect themselves. People want to take care of themselves, but you know, simple things like this aren't always available.
Yeah. What are some of the other new prevention technologies besides the good work that you're doing that are there other technologies that are also being developed right now?
Sure. Well, you know, the vaccine research continues moving forward, but something that's interesting that people may or may not have heard of is a technology called PrEP, or pre-exposure prophylaxis. I like to call it oral prevention. It's easier than saying the word prophylaxis. And what this entails is, for instance, a high-risk individual taking HIV medication every day to ward off HIV. So using what we use for treatment as prevention. And there are actually a number of trials in the world happening right now. There's over 20,000 people internationally in large-scale oral prevention trials. And we're going to start getting data from these trials that show whether it works or not at the end of the year, early 2010.
Wow.
And that's really exciting. It's really exciting, and it's also really daunting. When much of the world doesn't have access to treatment, people who have HIV don't have access to treatment, it's hard to think of providing access to treatment, basically, for people who are negative. Mm-hmm. And even in this country, people may be surprised to know that half of all people living with HIV in the United States don't have regular access to care and treatment. So even in this country, providing oral prevention is going to be difficult when we can't provide treatment to people who need it, who are already infected with HIV or living with AIDS.
Yeah. What do you think has been, I mean, you were there in 2006, you're there again now 3 years later, 2009. You know, is the work of even, I guess, you know, we hear the most about the work of American advocates and, politicians, whether it's the rise of the Red Project, Bono and his work, Mandela's work, President Clinton's work, are you seeing those efforts manifest in change there? And were you able to, you know, see that they are reaping the benefits of some of this global new attention for the country?
I think so. I've also seen, I agree, I've also seen, you know, the incredible work that homegrown activists have done on the continent. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the number one advocacy activist groups in the world is based in South Africa. It's called the Treatment Action Campaign, with one of its leaders named Zaki Ahmed, and they're really incredible. They're leaders for all of us and very inspiring. I think
what is it about them? What is about them that's working then? The work that they're doing.
Well, I mean, they are brilliant. They are strategic. They are very good at doing direct action. Mm-hmm. They're very good at mobilizing people. Mm-hmm. They worked very hard against the former prime minister, the president of South Africa and the former health minister, mm-hmm. who both disputed that HIV was the cause of AIDS, mm-hmm. and said things like you can take a shower to clean yourself from HIV, and mm-hmm. and if you're sick, you can eat garlic and potatoes and
right.
take care of yourself that way. They denied the effectiveness of antiretroviral therapy. They were very good, and they continue to be very good at getting the word out and working every angle from the streets to the courtrooms, from legislation to direct action, grassroots advocacy.
And is that because they know, because they're coming at it from the inside, like they know how to navigate the terrain there, and it's harder for those advocates perhaps that aren't of the country?
Yeah, I think this brings up a really good point. I think, certainly Western support and Western capacity development among nations in Africa and elsewhere is welcome, but for it to be really effective, it has to be organic and grassroots. Only people from that country understand it.
Mm-hmm.
If you live in South Africa and it's a generalized epidemic and so many people are dying around you, you have that urgency that you might not have from Geneva, Switzerland, even though you
right.
really care.
Right.
And not understanding, you know, South Africa has 11 languages and many, many cultures and lots of history, and being able to understand that. I think there's been mistakes that the West has made in the past where we've kind of come in and tried to impose what we think should happen from kind of a Western perspective. And that often doesn't work. It has to be, we can be there to provide support, assistance, ideas, but at the end of the day, it has to be the group in Nigeria, the group in Kenya, the group in Namibia who takes the lead and comes to us for support when they need it, but doesn't allow us to sort of take the reins. That's where it goes. That's where we often go off the rails, I think.
So you've spoken about that program there that's more localized. Were you able to visit some of the facilities that are trying to provide direct care or that are trying to provide preventive care?
Yeah, you know, I got to spend an entire day doing site visits, and I went to two different groups. One is called the Grandmothers Against Poverty and AIDS. And it's in Khayelitsha. It's a huge township outside, or actually part of Cape Town, of over 1 million people. It's just enormous. And it's this wonderful program that supports grandmothers. What has happened in South Africa is so many people in middle age have died. Mm. So you have very old and very young, and you have grandmothers now who are faced with raising 10 children mm-hmm. from all their kids who passed away. And these grandmothers, you know, they needed all kinds of support to understand HIV and AIDS, even to understand the new generation. They're from an apartheid era, and they have kids who are growing up in a free South Africa. There's a huge generational mm-hmm. conflict. So there's an organization there to support the work they do, and Bristol-Myers Squibb is one of their main funders, and that's who I went on these tours with. Then we went to this really great place in another township in wine country, so this beautiful part of the country, and then this, you know, township, which is not quite as beautiful, and we went to a place called Butterfly House, which is a place that provides care for people impacted by HIV, all kinds of programming for young people, They do home-based care where they have all these lovely caregivers on bikes who cruise around the township and visit people. So I have to say, both of those visits were the absolute highlight of my trip. And, you know, if I had done nothing else, it would have been worth it just to be there and to see what they're doing and the strength and resilience and amazing creativity of these fabulous people.
When you come away from, you know, the time that you spent there, do you come away with hope? Do you come away fired up? Is it, do you come away overwhelmed? Is it all of that?
It is all of that. I came away extremely fired up and excited and determined. And I also, you know, feel how daunting the issue of HIV and AIDS is. And when you think about providing prevention in a Western context, and then you're in a township where, you know, 12 people are living in a very small space like a shack, how do you think people in that context have sex? And how do they protect themselves? Sex is often furtive and quick, and it's in places where you can't sort of, oh, hold on, we need a condom. Hold on, we need to apply a microbicide. Mm-hmm. And so I really felt like, my God, we have such work to do. But then I see like these incredible grandmothers who are faced with everything you can imagine, poverty and AIDS and everything that includes. And they're singing and dancing, and they're saying, you know, we don't have time to cry. We don't have time to be depressed. We have work to do. And they're making the best out of a really, really tough situation. So I figure if they can do it, and these little kids who have lost their families can get up and dance and, like, make a life for themselves, I certainly can come back to the comfort I have in Chicago and fight and continue to work on their behalf and all and on everyone's behalf who is living with HIV or somehow impacted by it or at risk for HIV.
And what would you say here in kind of wrapping this up, just to bring it to a more local level? Because you'll have a lot of listeners say, well, that's great, but how can I do anything to affect change, you know, in Africa? How can I do anything to affect change on a global scale? And I know that you are the director of advocacy at AIDS Foundation of Chicago. And no matter where you are listening from, listener, you can, you know, you have your own community. And I know even small communities today have HIV and AIDS organizations. What would you say to people about the importance of showing up in one's own community? And does that have an impact on a global level?
Absolutely. It does have an impact. Showing up is the whole thing. It seems really daunting. Oh, my God, how can I ever make an impact on such a huge level? Well, it does start at home. And getting involved in your local organization is part of the bigger story. So, yes, every county and every area in the state of Illinois has HIV. There are many organizations, big and small, throughout. My organization is the AIDS Foundation of Chicago. It's called AIDSChicago.org. You can get on our email list. You can respond to action alerts. And we have fun things, you know, in October 3rd, we have the AIDS Run and Walk.
Yeah.
Where we spend the first half of the day. It's always beautiful on AIDS Run and Walk Day. We're down in Grant Park, and the sun is shining, and you're walking and or running and raising a few dollars, and really you're supporting the work that we do within our grant-making program, and a number of those dollars do go to projects that are based in Africa.
Yeah.
So just by showing up, raising $30, and going for a nice walk by the lake, you are doing something. So I think you hit the nail on the head, Amy. Most of it is about showing up. All you need to do is show up, answer that email, make the call, visit the website, show up in the real world or the cyber world, and you are making a difference just by doing that.
Well, and I know to encourage folks that listen to this and maybe live in the Chicagoland area, I know that myself and one of my co-hosts, Stephen Rader, will be walking with Season of Concern. And so we want to encourage you to sign up with many different organizations and non-for-profits that maybe aren't even HIV AIDS organizations, but part of the GLBT community or other communities in Chicago that, you know, get groups of people together to walk together and raise money for the cause. And if you want more information on this conference, which as you can already hear from just the enthusiasm and the many conversations that were evoked out of the 5th International AIDS Conference, it's amazing. It's only been 5 years, but amazing how much manifests in that time there and how many people get to share information and connect. You can find all of that on their website, which is IAS2009.org. We'll have that and the AIDSChicago.org website linked in our show notes. And Jim, we hope that you will come back and continue just to keep us up to date on you know, new technologies and new resources in the HIV and AIDS community.
Well, I would be delighted to come back anytime you'll have me. Thanks a lot, Amy.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Okay. Take care.
Want to take your tennis game to the next level? Midtown Tennis Club wants to send you back to school for its patented instruction program, Tennis Schools. Whether you're a beginner or advanced intermediate, Tennis Schools has a program to fit your game. Enrollment in Tennis Schools starts at only $105 and includes a 4-week membership to the Midtown Tennis Club, including access to Midtown's fitness center, practice lanes, and locker rooms, as well as invitations to 2 tennis parties and instructions from the country's best pros, all starting at $105. That's less than $30 per lesson. Midtown Tennis Club is located in Lincoln Park at 2020 West Fullerton Avenue. For more information, call 773-235-2300 or visit midtown.com/Chicago and just click on the Tennis Schools link. Who said school can't be fun? So Cleo, it's always so lovely to have you on the show, and I guess we're just going to have to come down to Florida and do some shows here in the winter when it starts getting so super cold. I can't stand it. I'm just going to have to hop an American Airlines plane and head down and get to be a part of your little community for a while.
Oh, you have to come down and we'll take you to dinner and dancing and you get to drink some good rum. And trust me, your feet won't touch ground. You'll be tired when you go back.
Is there such a thing as bad rum?
Yes. We'll have that discussion when you get here.
Okay.
I'm going to show you rum you never knew about.
Oh, I'll take
it. It is always such a joy to spend time with you. You are my sister from a different mother, boy, I tell you.
It's true.
Because
it's
feel a connection with Chicago and so much I love you. You know how much you are one of my heroes, Amy. You know that. I think you are one badass broad and I will always celebrate and shout you up, man. Trust me.
Well, I love that. I love that. And I celebrate you. And I'm so glad you're on the show bringing your perspective to our QueerCast listeners. On the next show, I'm going to have an openly gay Chicagoan who has a new book out about the tarot. And I've always been really fascinated in it. And Paul Quinn, he is so lovely. He's now my Twitter friend. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, folks, at Amy Matheny. But he and I are going to take a little jaunt down to the beach where he's going to do some readings for me. And he's going to talk about whether or not the tarot is anything unique for the GLBT community. I think, you know, it's always unique to the GLBT community. We're such unique people.
Wow. So how delicious will that be?
Got to listen to that one, Cleo. You'll love it.
I am definitely going to be listening to that one. You can't stop me.
Exactly. And then I'm going to bring you coverage from Greece in our upcoming podcast, plus Levi Christ coming up soon. He's the star of Million Dollar Quartet. His CD has been hitting the airwaves and Logo and the online charts all summer long. He's finally on the show, Levi Christ. Just a little something to tempt you for the shows coming up. Cleo, enjoy the rest of your delicious summer and have a wonderful Labor Day.
Sweetheart, you have a delicious trip and I'm looking forward to hearing about it when you get back. Easy journey now, all right?
Excellent. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our QueerCast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueerCast.com and iTunes. The next QueerCast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City QueerCast, queer and now.